Okay, great. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our call to discuss the impact that quantitative tightening has had on bank deposit behavior and also the resulting impact on the Federal Home Loan Banks, which is affecting really every corner of the capital markets. So I'm Tom O'Hara. I'm the head of bank strategy at Santander U.S. Capital Markets. And with us today, we have Mark Steinecker and Dave Bove, both from our agency debt trading desk, and also Kevin Dong from our CMO trading desk. A little later on the call, we'll hear more from Mark and Dave in terms of what they're seeing around FHLB debt issuance, and then we'll hear from Kevin regarding some of the FHLB activity on the asset side of their balance sheets, and then we should have some time for questions at the end. So we greatly appreciate everyone making the time to join today. So if you take a look at this slide, we had our great graphics team cram a lot of information into one slide, so hopefully you all can see this. But just to start, at the top of the slide at 12 o'clock, quantitative tightening is really where the story begins, looking at the runoff that we're seeing from the Fed's balance sheet, both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, a maximum of about $95 billion a month, although that's been less in recent months, just given the rise in rates that we've had and mortgage prepayments slowing down. But we can see it's been hundreds of billions of dollars of tightening that is impacting the banking system. And that really takes us to the 2 o'clock graph, deposits leaving the system. The amount of deposits leaving the system is pretty much mirroring what we've seen in terms of the Fed's balance sheet runoff as well. And so just to spend a few minutes on the banks and kind of the dynamics that are going on there, one statistic that we like to track is the bank's loan-to-deposit ratio. This is really an indication of the excess liquidity that a bank will have. Prior to the pandemic, we saw those ratios around 90, which is a good healthy number because it means the bank has plenty of loan activity, which is helping earnings, but they also have excess liquidity at the same time. So with all of the Fed stimulus money that rolled into the system during the pandemic in 2020 and 21, we saw those ratios decline to about 65. So just a ton of excess liquidity at that point in time. We really saw a decline in wholesale funding. Banks were very heavily deposit funded over that time period. And then as we came out of the pandemic in 22, we really saw a tremendous amount of loan growth. And of course, the Fed started hiking at that same point in time. And we started to see an increase in those loan-to-deposit ratios. And those stood at about 75 for our tracking group. At Santander U.S. Capital Markets, we have a group of about 40 of the top 100 banks in the country that we're tracking. So that number was 75 for that group and going higher in Q4. A lot of the Q4 data is still not yet available, but just anecdotally, we're seeing those numbers grow as deposits run out of the system. So through the third quarter, the median decline in overall deposits for that bank group was about 2%. But what's interesting is the mix of deposits is changing, and banks are having to go more into the expensive interest-bearing deposits to try to keep depositors in-house. So while overall deposits were down, interest-bearing deposits were actually up 1%, and they currently stand at about, as of the end of Q3, stood at about 66% for that tracking group. That number is definitely going higher, and we'll expect to see that number at about, probably the mid-70s before this is all over. So, that certainly creates some earnings challenges for banks, but really more importantly, liquidity challenges. And those liquidity challenges are compounded by the fact that securities portfolios right now are generally underwater given the large rate increases that we've seen. So banks really don't want to sell securities for liquidity and realize those losses. And you've also seen a rise of some upstart banks that are competing with the traditional banks for those deposits. So the punchline is banks need wholesale funding, and that can really come in a variety of forms. One interesting form that is relatively more recent is the Fed's deposit window. The deposit window really historically was viewed as the lender of last resort. There was a 50 basis point premium associated with borrowing from the discount window, and banks were limited to just overnight funding. And at the beginning of the pandemic, the Fed changed those rules and took away that 50 basis point premium, which really removed a lot of the stigma that was associated with discount window borrowing. And they also allowed banks to borrow up to 90 days, cancelable at any time. So they gave the banks a lot more flexibility. The New York Fed recently noted that there was about $9 billion of discount window funding outstanding. This is primarily coming from smaller community banks, banks with assets of $3 billion or less that seem to have been disproportionately hit by deposit runoff relative to the larger banks that are out there. Another form of wholesale funding, unsecured debt issuance. We're seeing some banks take advantage of the currently inverted yield curve. We had a large regional bank client a couple of weeks ago issued 3-year and 10-year senior bank debt on the same day. There was about a 70 basis point differential between those two maturity dates, but because of the inverted curve, there was only a 30 basis point differential in the actual coupon for that debt. There was a 40 basis point inversion, which resulted in a very small coupon differential there. Also, brokered CDs are something that we're seeing more and more issuance of from banks, again, as they look to supplement their deposit funding that is running off. Securities repo, of course, is a viable alternative when we look at various maturity dates. The haircuts and the spreads are relatively comparable to what we see from the Federal Home Loan Banks, but certainly provide a level of diversification as well. And, of course, the last form of wholesale funding we wanted to talk about today was the Federal Home Loan Bank funding, and really drill in on that a little bit further. So if you take a look at the third graph on the slide at 4 o'clock, that's Federal Home Loan Bank advances, and you can see that those have been booming in 2022. As I mentioned, loan to deposit ratios going down, wholesale funding going down in 2020 and 21, and you can see that on that graph. But then again, with all of the loan growth that we saw in 2022, we really saw those advances spiking up quite a bit. Through the third quarter, they were up $304 billion year to date, which was an 87% increase from the start of the year. And again, a lot of the Q4 data is still pending, but anecdotally, we're seeing this trend continue. So if we go to the 6 o'clock graph, Federal Home Loan Bank capital is driving higher. So, the Federal Home Loan Banks are co-ops. So banks have to become members of the Federal Home Loan Bank and inject some capital when they initially become members. But then every time they take out a loan, which is an advance from the Federal Home Loan Bank, they have to inject new capital into the FHLB, usually to the tune of about 4 or 5% of the principal amount of the advance. So there's been a big injection of capital into the FHLBs as well. Through the third quarter, that capital was up $14 billion year to date, and that's a 29% increase from where the banks had been to start the year. With that capital comes a pretty healthy dividend as well. Those dividends vary from one bank to the next, from the different, across the different FHLBs, but they tend to range usually 5, 6, 7%, something like that. So that's a pretty large dividend, that the banks have to pay, and really pushes them to invest their capital in longer dated securities. And there's a limit in terms of what they can invest in terms of mortgage-backed and commercial mortgage-backed securities. Excuse me. And that's 3-to-1. based on the new capital that they have raised. So what's interesting, if you look at the 8 o'clock graph, this is Federal Home Loan Bank capital largely undeployed. If we apply that 3-to-1 ratio to the $14 billion of new capital that they've raised, it's about $42 billion of potential new investment at the limit between mortgage-backed securities and commercial mortgage-backed agency securities. But what that graph shows is that that capital is largely undeployed at this point in time, and the banks are really sitting on a lot of excess cash that's invested in various cash alternatives, short-term investments, and their longer-term investment portfolio is only up about $2 billion. So that means potentially there's about $40 billion missing in action in terms of potential new investment in some of those agency MBS and CMBS categories, potentially keeping spreads tight for the time being as investors are waiting for that cash to come into the market and be deployed. The last graph that we have on this slide up at the 10 o'clock slot is Federal Home Loan Bank debt issuance. And of course, with all of the advances that banks are making, the FHLBs are having to go out and issue new debt at the same time. It's about $529 billion of new debt issued last year from the FHLBs. We're going to hear a little bit from our agency debt trading desk in a minute, Mark Steiniger and Dave Bove, in terms of some of the impact that debt is having on their markets. Quite a big spike relative to the activity that we had seen the last couple of years. And, the final point to make in terms of just the reach that the FHLBs have, talked about, potential asset side investments, all of the debt issuance that they've made. The FHLBs are also historically fairly aggressive hedgers of their balance sheet duration from an asset liability management perspective. Traditionally, when they're buying fixed rate securities, they're putting on a pay fixed swap to convert that asset to a floating rate asset and try to keep their asset side duration very short. And similarly, on the liability side, when they issue fixed rate debt, they will put on a receive fixed swap to basically convert that liability to a floating rate pay. And that keeps their liability side very short as well. So they've been very active in those derivative markets as well. So just in conclusion, before we get to Mark, Dave, and we also have Kevin Dong on, who's the head of our agency CMO desk. QT should continue. Our chief economist, Stephen Stanley, put out a piece a couple days ago where I think some economists are projecting that if and when the Fed starts to ease and starts to lower rates, that they'll stop QT at that point in time, because otherwise it would be inconsistent to be tightening from a balance sheet perspective, but lowering rates and trying to be more accommodative. But Stephen made a great point, which is that even if the Fed is holding rates, it's still a restrictive rate, well above where we would view them to be accommodative. And even if they're lowering rates, at least for the first few reductions in rate, we're probably still going to be at overall a restrictive level. And so he's making the point, it's actually consistent that they could be lowering rates from relatively a very high rate today and still moving ahead with QT and balance sheet reduction at the same time. So the point there is that, all of these trends should continue over the next few months. We expect to continue to see strong loan growth at banks. The recent Fed H8 reports are showing growth in really every category, particularly C&I loans tend to be one of the strongest out there. And so the Federal Home Loan Bank should continue to be active in all areas of the debt capital markets as they play as investors, issuers, and risk managers. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mark Steiniger from our agency debt trading desk, And Mark, maybe if you could just give us a little bit more background on your role and then some of the activities that you've seen recently related to FHLB borrowings.
Sure. Good afternoon. Thanks, Tom, for hosting this call. I'm Mark Steinecker. My role and responsibility is I manage our money market franchise. So obviously it revolves around the GSEs, discount notes, SOFR floaters, commercial paper, and so forth. But today we'll talk about, as Tom has been talking about, the home loan banking system. And I thought it'd be kind of helpful just to give a little refresher on the system. And for those who may know or may not know, just a little refresher here. So the home loan banking system is made up of 11 regional member banks, which are joint and severally owned. And they're obviously across the United States in all different regions. And their primary focus is really to fund member lending, mortgage-related programs, and essential loan advance needs by their members. And lately, they've been very active in the front end of the market, as Tom alluded to via his graphs. And today we'll just talk about two of the biggest drivers of their issuance, which would be discount notes and SOFR floaters. So each of the member banks, obviously they walk in each and every day and they're looking to fund whatever loan advances may come up and so forth and so on. So they have a couple different ways how they can fund those advances. And obviously they have a rollover schedule and they'll come up with some levels that will fit their book and some of the metrics that these banks look at. They look at spreads versus OIS. They look at term SOFR levels, and they also look at spreads to other money market products such as treasury bills and how they can best utilize the market to achieve the cheapest source of funding. So on any given day, not all 11 banks will be in the market, but primarily the larger banks will be in the market. That would be New York, Cincinnati, Des Moines, San Francisco, and those probably are the main drivers of the home loan banking system. And obviously they operate through the Office of Finance, who for all intents and purposes is considered the gatekeeper. And the Office of Finance also comes up with a pricing grid that they work with the banks, and they basically come to an agreement in terms of what kind of issuance levels they're going to come out with on that given day, and whether they really need the funding or they don't need the funding. They can approach the market two different ways, in that if they need the funding, they're going to obviously put the clearing levels on for the investor base. But then again, they're also opportunistically looking into the marketplace at how they can achieve some of the best funding for a rainy day situation, if you will. So evidenced by last week's activity, just to highlight some of the workings of the home loan banking system, they did a lot of pre-funding, and they generally just did one-year fix discount notes, and they did at the tune of $14 billion in issuance collectively amongst all the banks, which has taken them out of the market for the most part this past week. Again, they're pre-funded, so they have opportunity to sit back and not really tap into the marketplace as much. But with that being said, the outstandings have grown dramatically. In 2023, just to give you an idea of the issuance, they have $460 billion in discount note outstandings. And so for floaters, they have $335 billion outstanding. So they are on a record pace, as Tom had mentioned earlier in the call, based on, declining bank deposits. Obviously, the banks, some of the larger money center banks have been actively using the home loan banking system to replenish those lost deposits, if you will. And that's driven the market in a totally new direction, in that we've come to look at the the home loan banking system as the 800-pound gorilla in the marketplace. Back years ago, Fannie and Freddie led the charge, and now they're just a distant cousin, if you will, of the home loan banking system, which continues to grow and will continue to grow in this rate environment. So for me, it's been a very exciting time in terms of the abundance of issuance, the abundance of activity across the curve. The SOFR floater market is just has really spiked for the home loan banking system in a big way. And they continue to utilize both discount notes, SOFR floaters, and I'm sure Dave will allude to the callable market. But these are their two biggest drivers of debt issuance, and they will continue to be the two biggest drivers of their debt issuance going forward. And the front end of the market is easily able to, the investor base is easily able to absorb this increased issuance with little or no headaches whatsoever. So we continue to see good demand from the client base. And, you know, the fact that they're pricing more and more in line with the market, with the competitive products, it's an easier sale for a customer to purchase without leaving too much yield on the table. And in some respects, they're picking up some really attractive yields, like 5% in 6 months, 5% money market yield in 6 months is very attractive to many customers. So we are seeing a good cross-section of investor buying. And again, the banks have been stepping up, as Tom mentioned earlier, to increase their issuance across the curve. So I think going forward all the way into 2023, we're going to continue to see this this rapid issuance by the banks. And, I'll leave it there.
Okay, well, thank you, Mark. That's great color. Appreciate all of that detail as well. It's pretty interesting. And, it sounds like, as you said, it's a record pace, and they've really been flooding the market recently. And so maybe we'll turn to Dave Bobe, also from our agency debt trading desk. And Dave, color from your perspective, and maybe if you could just kind of give us a quick overview as well in terms of, kind of your involvement in that space, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm David Bove. I do the underwriting for new issue debentures for the GSEs. Obviously, the three big GSEs that we're open with are Home Loan Bank, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac. I guess the one thing that really sticks out for me within the last year or so, maybe a little bit over a year, with Home Loan Bank was, a little bit over a year ago, they were really the only, out of those big three, the only ones that were issuing, it's considered medium-term note debentures and callables. And I think they may have had an advantage going into transitioning from using LIBOR funding to SOFR funding. I think they kind of got ahead of everybody, at least in regards to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So about a year or so ago, they were really the only ones that were issuing and building up their issuance. So they also kind of took advantage, I think, of the fact that Freddie Mac does not really do issuance in callables outside of 1 year, in the 1 year area, I should say, in the 1 to 1.5 year area. And I think that's a bit of an advantage for them, just given where the shape of the curve is. That's kind of where the yield is in the front end. And there's a lot of demand for that kind of paper right now. So I think that's given them the advantage to boost their issuance. I was looking at a chart that one of our swap counterparties sent out showing that net issuance supply for those issuers, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, are right around zero for the last year or so. And right around the middle of last year is really where Home Loan Bank began to take off. and you could see they were issuing bigger size deals and just occupying a bigger share of the debt market for the GSEs. So I guess that's pretty much what I've seen. I'm not sure if there's anything else I can help with. But from my perspective, the funding that each one of the GSEs come to the market at is virtually the same, although there is a little bit more flexibility with Home Loan Bank as far as what size they'll issue in the fact that they'll issue more structured stuff like step-up notes. I know I've done a lot of that lately. Again, I think it's a good strategy when we're in a rising rate environment. So that's been helpful for me as far as choosing the agency to issue with. And that's mainly it, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
If there's anything, other questions, Tom, that you might have for me?
Yeah, no, that's a good overview, David. I think we're running a little bit over, so I appreciate that. And again, great color on the debt issuance side. So just in the interest of time, maybe, you know, last but not least, we have Kevin Dong, as I mentioned, head of our agency CMO trade desk. And I think Kevin can give us a little bit more insight in terms of the asset side of the balance sheets for the FHLBs, Kevin.
Great. Thank you, Tom. I'll keep this short and sweet. So my name is Kevin Dong. I'm the head of agency CMO trading here at Santander. So my desk is responsible for structuring and trading all fixed rates, floating rate CMOs, derivatives, as well as HECMs and SBAs. We work very closely with the pass-through desk and agency CMBS desk to find the relative value within the agency mortgage universe. So we have this constant dialogue to kind of discuss, you know, what are some solutions for our clients and what are some of the cross-selling opportunities as well. Well, thank you for this opportunity to speak on the call, and I'm going to share with the group some of the flows that we see on the trading side. So historically speaking, Federal Home Loan Banks have been large buyers of agency multifamily products. So one of the most popular trades is buying fixed-rate dust pools and swapping the fixed rate into floating rate. So effectively, you're creating a synthetic uncapped floater at a LIBOR plus 60 or 70 DM. So that was – and with an uncapped floating rate without a cap on the floater. So that's been a pretty attractive trade versus funding. In addition to that, we have also seen buyers of uncapped agency CMBS floaters and as well as capped CMO floaters. So if you think about, why do they buy CMO floaters versus agency CMBS floaters, obviously CMO floaters have a cap on it, right? So you need to be compensated for the margin itself. But what we saw during the COVID years was that when rates were low and TBA basis was tight, there's very little creation on the single family side. So we saw basically a mass wave of buying of floating rates in the on multifamily side. However, in the past few months, what we've seen is that agency CMBS floaters, so K floaters that were issued just even a couple weeks ago, I tightened in from 80 DM, that was December levels, to low 50s DM. This is more recent prints. So that's about 25 to 30 DM tighter just in the last couple of months. And most of that demand was coming from the home loan banks. On the CMO floater side, however, it's a different story. The spreads from December till now, it's largely unchanged just because creation has gotten wider. Mortgages have widened out into the sell-off in this past few days as well. So we are seeing some of that crossover buying into the cap floaters in CMO space. I would say the most popular caps that we're seeing is 7 caps. You're still about 150 basis points out before you're hitting the cap. And if you do hit the cap, you're getting a 7% fixed rate virtually basically at par. So it's been that's a pretty attractive carry trade as well. In addition to floating rates, we have seen some buying of fixed rates as well. While the fixed rate buying is a little bit spotty, and part of it, I think, is also on the funding side for home loan banks, the fixed rate funding is a lot more expensive than floating rate funding. However, as rates sell off, we have seen 5.5% front sequential structures are trading at basically a par handle. So you're talking about very close to 5.5% yield. So this offers an opportunity for investors to really lock in that 5.5% yield and just add on a little bit of duration into the books. Just in case rates go lower in the future, obviously your floating rate coupons will go lower as well. So this is an opportunity for them to lock in the fixed rates. So that's kind of the flows that we're seeing here on the CMO desk. So I'm happy to answer any questions as well. Thank you.
Okay, great, Kevin. Really appreciate that. Excellent color on the asset side. Unfortunately, we have gone over by a few minutes, so we're not going to have time for any Q&A today. But in addition to Kevin, I want to thank Mark and Dave also for participating in this. If you have any questions, just please reach out to your Santander U.S. Capital Markets salesperson. So thanks very much. We'll catch you next time.